Welcome to the last robotics seminar of the semester. We have a very, very special treat. As the last robotics seminar, we thought we would do something unusual, and I think this is the most heterogeneous group that we ever had to hear a talk here. The guest today is Dan Huttenlocher. We are very happy to have him. Dan is really, he wears many, many hats, and he is the true Renaissance man. There is so many things that he does. He started out as and he still is a computer vision scientist. That's how half of us know Dan. He has done some very fundamental stuff in computer vision. He started in MIT with Ullman, doing recognition when nobody was doing recognition. Now, of course, it's the hottest thing, but Dan really was at the beginning of it. He was later became interested in also algorithms, fast vision algorithms, something that again most of us don't really think much about. But Dennis really has figured out many important contributions on how to make vision algorithms actually computable in some reasonable amount of time. At the same time, Dan's other hat is in industry, where he worked at Xerox PARC and was part of the development of the JBIG2 image compression standard. Yet another head of Dan's is an entrepreneur. He has a startup called
Intelligent Markets.
Intelligent Markets that does financial stuff and has done very well. I don't really know much more about
that's it. A technical term.
Yes, financial stuff. Another very recent hat of Dan's is very close to our hearts. Dan was the advisor for the Cornell DARPA Grand Urban Challenge team, which did extremely well. It didn't get the first place, but it has done extremely well, especially for being an all undergrad team. So really kind of a low budget undergrad effort that Dan supervised. They have done amazingly well, and I think, you know, unfairly got attacked by an MIT vehicle. And but anyway, so you can talk to him about that. But the reason he is here today, we thought we would do something different, something new, and kind of, you know, off the main track. And Dan is actually now a professor at Cornell in computer science department 50% and in the business school 50%. Kind of an unusual thing. Yes. He thought of something that would unite the two halves of his personality, and he became interested in online social networks. And I think this is something that would be of interest actually to many of us who are interested in social networks and data used to mine the data in social networks. And I'm very happy to have Dan give this kind of a broad talk. Thank you for coming. Here is Dan Huttenlocher.
Thanks, Alyosha. I was going to say at the beginning, I told Alyosha I was going to blame him for today's seminar, because at least when I was meeting with computer vision students this morning over in Smith Hall, they all seemed really puzzled about what I was talking about today. So, although as a footnote, I do think, you know, one of the great things about computer vision is that it's so damn hard that every other problem seems tractable after you've worked on vision for a while. And we take so many techniques from so many different areas to try to solve those hard vision problems that I've actually found myself amazingly well prepared techniques-wise for switching to this area. So this is stuff that, as Alyosha mentioned, I'm looking at largely because I'm really interested in things that will bridge between my business school half, where, you know, we look at things like marketing and organizational behavior and so forth, and my computer science half, where things like data mining are of interest. This is work that I'm doing jointly with my colleague John Kleinberg and with some students and postdocs of ours, including some former students who are up there. So just to sort of start out, there's been a lot of work on social networks in computer science in the last sort of 6 or 8 years. And I want to just distinguish a little bit about what we're doing at Cornell that I think is a little bit different than some of the research going on in computer science more generally in terms of social networks. So we've been looking at social network models by working much more closely with social scientists than I think a lot of computer scientists have. And I'll sort of give a little editorial plug here at the beginning, which is that I think that it's really important as computer scientists bringing the tools that we have to bear on social science problems, that we don't ignore the history of social science research in this area. In fact, there are a lot of very valuable models that social scientists have developed over the years, and they may not meet our syntactic definition of models in the sense that they have nice formal mathematical definitions like we're used to as computer scientists, but they're very important models and they have a lot of understanding that sometimes as computer, you know, I view us as sort of the physicists of the 21st century. We're a little arrogant and we tend to just sort of run into something and assume that we know better than the people who were already there. And I think in this case, not so true. So in fact, dating back to the 70s, there's a sort of classic study by Zachary, and this is maybe indicative of the kinds of work that's been done on social networks in the social sciences, or at least I'll use it as an illustrative example, where he studied a karate club. And so the nodes here are individuals, the edges are friendship links between individuals. He discovered those friendship links through observation and interview techniques. And the reason these are colored in two different ways is that while he was studying this karate club, it split into two different karate clubs, the white circle karate club and the gray square karate club. And if you look at the graph structure here, it's not so surprising just looking at the links that it split where it split. In fact, nodes sort of 33 and 34 are sort of central to a cluster on the left, and nodes 1 and 2 are sort of central to a cluster on the right. And if someone told you this thing split and you ran something like min-cut, you might actually expect to find something sort of like that. And really, this question of sort of density and patterns of connectedness and how that relates to behavior is something that's been of interest in the social sciences now for 30 or 40 years, and that we're now very well equipped as computer scientists to look at it at a much larger scale. Because all of a sudden, we have all of this online social networks data that both gives us patterns of connectedness at a scale of 5 million or 50 million instead of 50 people like this, but where we can also observe behaviors in the online world. And so what my talk's going to be about is this issue of trying to connect patterns of connections to behaviors of individuals. And one other thing I should mention is that in doing these studies, we're going to be looking at aggregate properties of individuals. So not necessarily something that's so predictive of you as a person, but rather of collections of people engaging in some kind of behavior. So as I said, there's this sort of 50-year history here. These things have been hard to study traditionally with social science methods, except on a small scale. We have this bigger data now. Another thing is that there's a much broader set of social science literature that I think is very relevant here, which is things about social interactions and intrinsic interests and how the interactions between those affect behavior. And that's not always been modeled in sort of network-based ways in the social sciences. But that's also an important thing. And part of what I'll talk about today, looking specifically at Wikipedia, is how your interests versus your social ties affect what articles you edit on Wikipedia. And then the final sort of introductory kind of high-level point I wanted to make here is that it's amazing how interesting social networks are to the population at large, right? I mean, the robot vehicles are pretty interesting to the population at large too, but social networks, I think, actually trumps it. And way back before, you know, Facebook and MySpace and those sorts of things. I mean, if you just think about popular lore, things like 6 degrees of separation, this sort of Kevin Bacon game that people play, or you can substitute some other actor or actress's name in there. I mean, those really come out of actually scientific studies that were done in the 1960s. So there's, you know, sort of scientific work that was done that then just sort of merged into popular culture and became sort of part of our popular understanding about how it is that people interact with each other and the fact that we're all connected by relatively small numbers of intervening links. So in studying social groups, and primarily in the online world, although we've done a little bit of this in the offline world as well, and that'll come up a little bit in my talk, the kinds of questions we're looking at are things like social ties and the influence that they have on group joining behavior. So if you think about something like MySpace or actually LiveJournal, which we've been studying more than MySpace, it's one of these online social communities where you explicitly declare who you're friends with, so we have a friendship graph, and you also explicitly choose to join certain sorts of communities. And so what we're interested in is looking at the relationship between who you're friends with and what groups those people are in and how that affects your propensity to join groups. And so unlike a considerable amount of research that's been done in this area in the CS community, where groups are sort of determined implicitly by, say, spectral clustering or other kinds of graph clustering methods. Here we have explicit groups where people are explicitly affiliating. We're not trying to implicitly find groups through clustering or some other activity on the graph. So given this this sort of joining behavior that we want to try to predict from the graph structure, there are then a number of other interesting sort of natural questions that follow that. So when we're looking at groups, you might ask, well, how do these structural properties not only affect individuals' propensity to do something, but actually affect the groups, like the group growth rate? And then, as I said, we're also interested in not just social ties, but also your interests. So it's not just who you know that governs whether you join a particular group in something like MySpace or LiveJournal, but also your interests and the interests of people in that group. And then social ties and interests, of course, are not independent from one another. The people you know tend to modify your interests. Your interests tend to modify who it is that you become friends with. And so trying to understand the relationship between social ties and intrinsic interests and how those affect one another over time are another class of questions we're interested in. And then toward the end, if I still have time left, and you know, always just depends how long it takes to get through stuff, we've also done some work looking at focus of topics of discussion in groups and how that changes over time. And if I have time, I'll speak about that a bit. I guess one other thing I should say, although you know, hopefully at CMU this doesn't need saying, but please stop, interrupt, ask questions. Right? I mean, even though this is a slightly big audience for that, I'd much rather have people stop and interrupt me and ask questions if they have questions or disagreements or I'm being unclear, then save it till the end. So in terms of propensity to join groups, as I said, we're interested in groups where people have some explicit affiliation action. So you know, the church that you attend, or the intramural soccer team that you belong to, or the professional organizations that you belong to, those are all explicit actions that you take in affiliating with groups. And we're interested in trying to be able to predict those actions that you take based on the social network and based on your interests. Now, in looking at this kind of study, one thing that I think is really important to remind not only everybody in the room of, but remind myself of, because I fall into this trap all the time, these are observational, correlational kinds of studies. Right? We're not determining causality in what we do here. We're not manipulating. We don't have an experimental manipulation protocol where we sort of change something and see what the outcome is in relation to the change. We're just studying stuff that happened. And the best we can really hope to do there is look for correlations. And so just to sort of, you know, illustrate in more common everyday terms, right? I mean, people, that there's all this sort of lore out there in the press that being overweight is bad for your health. But nobody really knows whether that's causal or not. At best, people know there's a correlation between being overweight and having health problems. And in fact, recently there have been some studies in the press, studies that have just started to be reported in the press, that suggest, in fact, that being overweight is less important in terms of health than your level of fitness. And so, in fact, overweight people who are very fit have better health than thin people who aren't so fit. So it's, you know, just that any kind of correlational study that just says, when I see this about people, I see that about people, isn't a causal model. And it's very dangerous to sort of infer causal things from that. And I'll try not to slip into that myself. But all we're doing here is observing things about, say, number of friends and relationships between that and your activities, and not saying that there's any causal relation there. So in the stuff I'll talk about today, we've studied two kinds of groups. I mean, we studied some others, but most of what I'll talk about today will be these. So one of them is LiveJournal, which is a reasonable size online community. MySpace is certainly the bigger, more well-known one. But LiveJournal's got about 370,000 of these active groups that people can participate in, and about 5 million users who participate in those on a regular basis. And just by scale, MySpace is about 10 times larger. So it's more like about 50 million. And as I said before, people explicitly join groups and explicitly declare friendships with other people. And we're interested in looking at the relationships between those. The other kind of group that we've studied is Wikipedia, and at least at first, if you haven't sort of been looking at social networks studies in the online world, you might think, Wikipedia, wait a minute, that's an encyclopedia. What does that have to do with social networks? But Wikipedia is produced by a rather large active social network. There are about 500,000 users of English Wikipedia, right? So there are several different Wikipedias in different languages that are independent of each other. But in English Wikipedia, there are about 500,000 users who both have registered with Wikipedia and therefore have a user ID. And they also have something else called a user talk page. And you can think of a user talk page as essentially a blog page. It's a place where you can have discussions with other people. By Wikipedia policies, these talk pages are used not just to be sort of generic blog pages, but to be pages that are concerned with your activity on Wikipedia. So it's pretty fair to assume that somebody who has a user ID and a talk page is engaged in activity in Wikipedia, and whatever discussion activity is happening on their talk page is about Wikipedia rather than about, you know, the band that they like or the restaurant they ate at last week or whatever. And these users are responsible for almost two-thirds of the article edits on Wikipedia. So these registered users, who are people we can sort of try to build models of their behavior, are responsible for the majority of activity happening in terms of article edits. And what makes this community sort of interesting compared to LiveJournal is that on Wikipedia, these people are actually producing a useful work product, right? So there are about 3.4 million articles in English that in the English Wikipedia that have been created by this 500,000 users interacting with each other. On LiveJournal, it's more sort of about entertainment and meeting people, right? I mean, there's not really a shared common work product that's being produced. So it's two fairly different venues. But so we're going to look at Wikipedia as this sort of social community, and not so much in terms of, in fact, nothing I'll talk about today will have anything to do with article sort of quality or content or things like that, which a number of other groups are also studying. So let's just sort of look at the first simple example here of just joining a group. And the kind of models that exist out there and that we certainly also use here are diffusion of innovation kinds of models. So it's like adopting a new technology, right? So if you think about, you know, everybody running out and buying an iPhone, or maybe not everybody, but people running out and buying iPhones, you think about the spread of new technologies, that's sort of a diffusion of an innovation. Diseases spreading. And so you can think of joining a group as, you know, you hear about this group somehow, and that's the innovation that's spreading. And so you can think of a very simple model, which is just the probability of joining if you're not in the group, depending on the number of friends that you have that are in the group. And then, moreover, also depending on sort of the graph structure. And so we'll talk about somebody outside the group as being K exposed if they have K links to people who are in the group. So here, the red circles are individuals in the group, the yellow squares are individuals outside, and this is a 3 exposed person, another 3 exposed, 2 exposed, and so forth. And then sometimes I might use the term fringe, which is these individuals outside the group who have at least one exposure tie into the group. And so then the natural question to ask here is, you know, of individuals like this, who is the most likely to join? And does it depend on K, this exposure level? So, you know, I've got a K equals 3, 2, 3, 3. So one might, for example, expect that the more deeply exposed people are more likely to join the group. But in addition, you might start to look at the structure of the network here. So these 3 people have 2 of the 3 possible links in between them. And this is something that in the social science literature often gets referred to as an open triad, where there are 3 people with only 2 edges. Here there are 2 people who know each other. Here there are 3 people with a closed triad. And here there are 3 people where nobody knows each other. And so the first couple of questions that I'll talk about in terms of the experiments that we've run are looking at predicting the probability that these people will join this group based on their connectivity to the group and based on the structure of the network of the subgraph that they're connected to. So pretty natural set of questions from this. So in measuring this kind of thing, you know, so it all sounds great so far, but now we actually have to get this out of some data. And so when we look at this probability of joining, just let's just say as a function of number of friends for a moment. So we're just going to draw a little curve. P, the probability of joining, is a function of K, the number of friends you have in the group, for people who aren't obviously yet in the group. So in making this more precise, one sort of simple way to do this is to, at a given time T, we can look at all the people who are, for a given community C, we can look at all the people who are not in that community. And then we can look at their number of ties into the community. And then at some later time, T prime, we can look at which ones of those actually joined the community, and then just look at the fraction. And that's an estimate of this probability of joining. And so we can do that for just one fixed pair of snapshots, T and T prime, across all the communities. And that gives us a pretty good way of estimating because we aggregate across a whole bunch of communities. But maybe we happen to pick some weird times T and T prime. And so you might feel better if we took a set of snapshots and did this. Now, this kind of snapshot-based method is, for the data I'll talk about today, is the method that we've used. But and we've done things where we aggregate across multiple snapshots as well as multiple groups. But when you look at things like Wikipedia, in fact, you actually have the whole time-stamped history of every single edit activity by every individual. And so you don't need to, you know, the great thing about taking a couple timestamps is if it's something where you don't have all the data, you can go out and, you know, do crawls at various times and say those are your timestamps. With the Wikipedia data, we can do some more detailed things given that we have the full time series. But on the stuff I'll talk about today, because we want to do things like compare Wikipedia and LiveJournal, and we don't have the whole LiveJournal history, I'll just talk about this technique based on snapshot pairs.
So is there a differentiation between transient period of the social network versus asymptotic behavior?
So in what we're doing here, we're sort of averaging all of that together. So basically what we're assuming right now is that there are a bunch of groups that we're averaging across, and they'll be at sort of different stages of their development. So some groups will still be growing quickly, other groups won't be. And in looking at this probability of joining as a function of number of friends or function of group structure, we're just going to average all those out. When we look at things like group growth rates, there we'll start to do some things where we try to look at the groups in more detail. But I think in general there's an incredibly interesting set of questions that we're sort of just starting to look at that I don't think have been looked at that well in the community that have to do with sort of life cycles of groups. So, you know, groups clearly have sort of early, middle, and late stages, just intuitively speaking. And trying to get a better handle on what that group life cycle looks like and are there sort of different categories of groups according to life cycle is an interesting set of questions that we don't yet have answers to. They're certainly on our list of things to ask. And if you think about this, again, sort of wearing my business school hat for a minute, I mean, if you're trying to think about how to get online groups to take off, for example, if there are certain characteristics of the groups that tend to grow quickly, structural characteristics or whatever, it would be interesting to understand what those are. So there are, I think, very practical implications of that.
Do you consider a relationship with a friend to be equally weighted? Or some friends can have like more influence on you and therefore you?
So on the stuff that I'll talk about first here, it's all equal. So there's just a friendship link or not. And in fact, the friendship links, there's a very high degree of reciprocity in any of these friendship links. So if you look at things like LiveJournal or MySpace or Facebook, there's about 80%, even though they're directed links, there's about 80% bidirectional reciprocity. Because it's quite a sort of social statement if someone friends you not to friend them back, right? So people tend to, it's just the lightweight activity is just to do the same thing in the other direction because it's sort of rude not to. And so the directed versus undirected link distinctions don't really play out here. In terms of link strength, in LiveJournal we don't have any real way of telling that because people just declare they're friends or not. I mean, we could sort of, you know, something like Facebook, you could go look and see how often do people post on each other's wall or something like that and do a strength measure. In the Wikipedia stuff, we do have some strength measures because we look at how frequently people post on talk pages. But for the first things I'll talk about, there won't be any. It'll just be binary 0-1. Friend, not friend. And the interesting thing, well, we'll see in Wikipedia, what's interesting is the strengths don't seem to make a big difference, at least in the joining behavior. So if we want this probability of joining as a function of k, the number of friends, it's sort of reasonable to assume that it's somehow going to go up across your number of friends increasing. But there are two fairly different shaped curves that that have sort of existed out there in terms of different possible models of this sort of behavior that are not so easy to tell apart unless you have a lot of data, right? So, I mean, you can imagine that there's some sort of critical mass effect that you have to get to some critical mass of friends, and then your probability of joining goes way up, and then it levels off. Or you could imagine more sort of, you know, the economist's view of the world of just sort of decreasing marginal utility, right? Just sort of each additional friend provides a little less value than the previous one. And the problem is that for small amounts of data, the error bars are such that you can't really, you know, they start low, they end high. You can't really tell very much about what's going on. I mean, frankly, you couldn't tell linear from this. And of course, if you have time-based adoption curves, if this x-axis here, instead of number of friends, is time since the innovation was introduced, things look like this, right? So if you look at purchase data for iPhones, right, there's sort of the early adopters, then there's the mass adoption stage where, you know, lots of people run out and buy them, and you know, it goes up quickly, and then it tends to asymptote off again. And the real question that we can start to address by having large-scale social network data is, instead of this x-axis being time, it can actually be the number of friends. You can start to look at the diffusion of this through the network instead of just the temporal aspect of it. So I guess my question for the room at large, and anybody who knows the answer from having seen this work shouldn't cheat. which model? What's a good? Is it diminishing returns, or is it S-shape, or is it something else? That's right, this could be like this fake question of A versus B, and the answer is C. I'm not above those kinds of. Right, I teach in a business school. That's my whole job, is to see about tricking people. So anybody want to hazard a guess here? Do I have to start cold calling? Someone must have an opinion.
A.
Why? Just because he wanted to say A.
It seems like
it took a while to sort of watch people around. Yep, so there's a good one. Anyone want to vote for?
Seems to me they're kind of the same thing, and it just depends on like how many friends do you need before you really get excited. And maybe the bottom is the social aid and the top is more. The reserve person.
Yeah, so maybe this is a little bit of a false dichotomy. I think that's a really good point that, you know, I guess this is critical mass where the mass is zero. So what's interesting here is this question of sort of how far, maybe another way to phrase this is how far along this curve do you need to get before things sort of start taking off? And what we found for LiveJournal is not very far. So this is probability of joining as a function of number of friends already in the group. This is a couple billion data points, right? Because it's, you know, several hundred thousand groups cross several million people. And so these are plus or minus two standard errors on the error bars. And you know, they're teeny here, but they already get pretty big, because what are these? These are the people who have 15 friends in a group and haven't joined the group yet, but do join it during our observation period. So you know, as you start getting out here, the n's are small, and that's why the error bars, because these are the people who had 40 friends in the group and hadn't joined yet, but then did join during our observation period. But it's pretty diminishing returns looking, except something funny is happening here between 0, 1, and 2. There's some more than marginal decreasing returns at the beginning, and then it very quickly levels off. And the way I've been liking to think about this is 1's an accident, 2's a pattern. Right, that the first person to do something is pretty clearly not very believable. But by the time there's two or more, that seems to be enough, at least for LiveJournal, that seems to be enough of a critical mass to be joining
your
things.
First data point, doesn't somebody have to join a group with no friends in it at some point, or else no one?
Right, so even zero here in general is these are groups that exist where there's no friendship links, right? So zero is already a slightly different quantity than one in the sense that these are people who are not in the fringe, who are just sort of spontaneous joiners. And then, of course, there are spontaneous joiners of communities that don't exist yet. And so all we're studying here is joining communities that exist. We have no community birth process sort of model that we're trying to look at. But we are studying spontaneous joining. And that's sort of what's different than all of the... So, I mean, another way to characterize what's different here is that these are the spontaneous joiners, and these are all of the ones who have at least one friend into the group.
How big are the communities?
On LiveJournal, they're incredibly variable. So anywhere from a handful of people to many thousands of people. And we just average them all together here. But in looking at things, I mean, so obviously when the communities are really small, it's hard to tell what's going on because the error bars are huge. But as the communities get more reasonable in size, we didn't see any clear size effects when we looked at the data. And so we just sort of averaged them all together. But we did pull them apart by sort of various size categories and try to see if the curves looked different, and they didn't really. But that's a good question. So for Wikipedia page editing, which is again sort of the group joining behavior here, right? So on LiveJournal it's sort of clear. Maybe on Wikipedia I need to sort of explain a little bit or remind you a little bit. So people post on user talk pages in Wikipedia, and that's what we're calling a friendship link or a tie, right? So if I decide to talk to you on Wikipedia, then that's me declaring friendship with you or declaring a tie with you. And again, these are very highly bidirectional. So if A posted on B's talk page, the probability that B posted on A's talk page is extremely high. So it's not clear that treating this as a directed graph really buys you very much. And then the editors of an article are what constitute a group here. So these groups are much smaller in general than the groups on LiveJournal, because the number of people who contributed to editing a given article tends to be in the tens, maybe up to 100. But unless you get some very controversial articles, I mean, a lot of people contributed to the George Bush article before it got locked. But in general, these communities tend to be much smaller. Somebody, yeah.
Yeah. Can you just explain the difference between those, how you see it? Because often these user talk pages, these ties, are just people discussing and coordinating about the articles that they're co-editing.
Yeah, so that is definitely an issue. I mean, so one question here is, you know, what does tie really mean here? So all I can say is that in looking at the data, I mean, there's always a question about what does a friendship link mean. So here, the friendship links are we talked for some reason, and it could be coordinating on a specific article. But even if it was coordinating on a specific article, in general, it's predictive of people's behavior editing other articles, right? So because remember, what we're looking at here is people had to communicate before they joined, right? These are friendship links into the community when you're not yet a member of the community. So it means that there's some article that you hadn't edited yet, and you talked to somebody who had edited the article, and then in the future you edited the article. And then we're just looking at the number of people you talked to who had edited, and then plotting this curve as a function of that. So while it might be that a lot of it's coordination behavior, it's still coordination behavior that's somehow influencing your other editing behavior on other articles. So yeah, it's not.
I mean, I guess in the way you're framing it there, it also seems like it's more of co-editing as well. Right, so editing is more likely than the tie aspect, the social aspect.
So basically what we're claiming is that editing an article is the activity that we're looking at, right? And I'm just calling that joining a group, but you could just call it editing. And I mean, and we're looking at how predictive are user talk page communications on article editing behavior. And in particular, we're looking at it in the following way. We're looking at how many conversations did you have with somebody who had edited Article C when you hadn't edited Article C? So how many people had you had conversations with who had edited C when you hadn't edited C? And then you subsequently edited C. And that's to be precise about the quantity. That's what these are studying. But so certainly, if it's coordination about a current article that you're both editing, it wouldn't be showing up in here. Yeah?
Are you including posting to the author talk page?
Just user talks here.
Okay. So
they might have been talking on the article talk page. So for people who know a lot about Wikipedia, there are user talk pages. There are also article talk pages, which are places to have discussions about an article. And really, what we were trying to look at was interactions that, right? I mean, so the problem with an article talk page is it's clear what community that talk page is about. And since we were trying to look about at previous interactions and effect they had on some community you weren't yet a part of, article talk pages didn't seem like a natural place to look for that kind of evidence, and that's why we didn't look for it there. But if you wanted to study things like coordination behavior, I think article talk pages would be a better place, actually, than user talk pages. But since we were trying to actually predict your behavior of articles you hadn't yet edited, that's why we didn't look at article talk pages.
How big was delta T, and did you vary that?
Yeah, we did. So delta T in this particular plot was, I think, on the order of 5 or 6 weeks. And we varied that anywhere from a couple of weeks up to a year. We actually, because with Wikipedia we have the whole history, we did this with no snapshots, where you just used every single edit. The plots look fairly different from this for reasons that I don't want to get into right now when you look at the time series data. But basically, it turns out that the snapshots in the time series have a fairly obvious relationship between them, but they're not, it's not the same thing. It's sort of almost like one's integrating the other one. But the data is consistent between the individual snapshots and using the whole time series. So it doesn't seem, because that's a very good question, like, you know, sort of what windows and how much, but it doesn't seem to be that sensitive to the window. So, I mean, these diminishing returns things have shown up in a lot of other stuff done around the same time that we did this work, which was in 06. So there's some work that Yuri Leskovich and Lada Domich and others did looking at DVD sales based on number of recommendations, which has this sort of diminishing returns kind of effect. And then Georgi Kozinets and Duncan Watts did some stuff on your probability of first sending email to somebody based on the number of mutual acquaintances that you had. And there were two conditions in their study, and I've forgotten what the difference was, but one of them showed more of this sort of diminishing returns than the other. But that kind of curve seems to be showing up in a lot of places in terms of this sort of adoption or joining behavior. So you know, beyond this sort of probability of joining as a function of number of friends, we were also interested in connectivity. And there are two fairly different sorts of theories out there, each of which makes sense in different settings. So one is a social capital sort of theory due to Coleman and others about the fact that the more connected your friends are, the more social capital they have, and that should increase your probability of joining, versus independence of information, right? If you're sort of, you know, believing a rumor, then the fact that the people who were telling you the rumor all know each other but doesn't make the rumor particularly credible. And so in the case of LiveJournal, we found that more connected friends increase the probability of joining, so it seems to be more consistent with this social capital sort of view of the world rather than independent sources of information. The data is a little hard to get, so I'll sort of explain our way through it here. So the thing is that we had to look at sort of, you know, three friends, four friends, five friends, et cetera, because we were looking at how connected the friends are. And so with three friends, which is the red curve here, right, they're three choose two different, you know, so we look at the proportion of pairs that are connected among friends. So with three friends, you can either get, you know, 1/3 or 2/3 of those three friends to have connections between them. When you get to four friends, which is the blue curve, now there's four choose two ways to do that, five choose two ways to do that, and so forth. But the problem is the error bars are getting bigger and bigger as we go from three to four to five, because there's less and less data, right? There are less and less sets of people who had five friends to even study the connectivity among, and then less and less of those as, you know, how many people were connected to five people in a community and all five of those people were connected to each other, that becomes an almost vanishingly small amount of data. But for where the error bars are reasonably small, you see this sort of upward trend in each of these curves. And so this data is consistent with this sort of social capital view of the world, that the more connected your friends are, the more likely you are to actually join a group. So as I said before, another natural question to ask around this is group growth. And so if you look at these two groups, they both have the same number of nodes, but very, very different structural properties. One of them is quite densely connected in terms of number of edges. One of them is very, very sparse. And what we saw here is sort of interesting. On the surface of it, it almost seems to contradict the previous result, unless you sort of stop and think about it. And this is why I think that getting better process models of what's going on here is really important. So groups with high clustering coefficients tend to grow more slowly, right? So clustering is defined as the number of closed triangles to open triads. And this is growth rate of groups as a function of the clustering. And it goes up a little bit and then down, but it clearly goes down. Right, with these error bars, I'm not so happy about making much of a statement about this, but I'll say maybe. But certainly, there's something going like that. But we just saw that individuals are more likely to join when their friends do know one another. So these almost sound like inconsistent results, right? Individuals are more likely to join when their friends know each other, but groups grow more slowly when they're more densely connected. What's going on? The question here is, it could be, for example, that these groups with lots of connections are old, and they're ossified, and they're not changing much anymore, right? So until you have some model of sort of group growth and group life cycle and how groups change over time, it's very hard to take descriptions of individual behavior and make sense of them in terms of group growth behavior. So that said, I think this more sort of opens up questions rather than posing lots of answers. But the point is that an individual's propensity to join a group seems to be higher if things are more clustered, but groups tend to grow more slowly if they get too clustered.
Do edges are assumed to have an edge and go away if
they don't. They're there. And that problem, again, in all of these things is that we don't have any real way. I mean, people form these friendship links and they never delete them. Just like not friending somebody back when they friend you is bad, it's really bad to go delete somebody you were friends with. And so these things tend to just accrete.
So understand this reverse link, if you had studied for a current setup of the group, what is the probability of allowing somebody into the group? Set up that probability and then study over time.
Yes.
Just the reverse effect.
Yep.
What you would.
That's true. You could, yeah. I mean, there are a number of other ways to set these problems up. I think that, to me, what's most interesting here would be to really try to look at some sort of model of group evolution over time, because it's pretty clear when you look at some of these groups that the older groups are behaving fairly differently in terms of growth than the newer ones. But yes, it's true. You could. There are a set of ways to look at that. So the other thing I wanted to talk about here was the relationship between social ties and intrinsic interests, since we've just been looking at social ties in terms of group joining behavior. So you can sort of think of this as trying to compare effects of who you know versus what you like, right? So we've been talking about how you know influences your group joining behavior, but clearly what you like also does. But to do that, we need some measure of interests, and we need measures of similarity of interests. So the way we choose to measure interests is just the groups that you already belong to. So whatever groups you belong to currently are some indication of your interests. And then once you've got just group membership as an indication of interest, then there are lots of sort of natural vector-based similarities to use on those, right? You've just got, say, some binary vector that says which groups you're members of, and there's lots of ways to compare those. The problem is we also want to form some kind of measurement of interests that's comparable with these social networks, right? So if you have some vector-based descriptions of individuals' interests and some similarity measure, you know, cosine metric, whatever. We want to be able to transform that into something like a graph of high affinities, right? We don't want sort of the complete graph of all affinities, because we want to be able, right, I mean, if we're looking at these things like probability of joining versus number of friends, we basically, right, we're looking at sort of a social network structure. We want to have a comparable kind of interest network structure. And so the natural way to think about that is some graph of high affinity similarities, so the people that you're most similar to. And in constructing such graphs, there are a variety of ways to do that. The particular way we did it in the studies I'll talk about now are just matching the degree with the social network graph, right? So you could build one of these graphs by thresholding the similarities at some level. You could build it by making sure it had the same number of edges as this graph in other ways. And we just decided so that things for the individual lined up as well as possible that we would match degree. So that means we have one graph where you have, as an individual, you have a node in each of two different graphs. Your degree is same in both of those graphs. And one of them, you're hooked to the D people that you have social ties with. And the other one, you're hooked to the D people that you have the most similar interests with. Right? So do people understand the two graphs we're going to compare? And then in terms of interest similarity measures, we use Jaccard coefficient, which just component-wise, mins is the sum of the mins over the maxes. And so for binary vectors, it's just intersection over union. So, you know, you can think of Jaccard as just a sort of natural extension of intersection over union to non-binary vectors. You can also normalize this by population level interest, which we also looked at. We tried a bunch of other measures that are commonly used for comparing interest vectors, and none of them were as predictive of joining behavior as Jaccard. So the results I'll present are just going to use the Jaccard measure. So time for the next quiz. In LiveJournal, what's more predictive of people's joining behavior? Their interests measured in this way or their social ties? So people join groups in LiveJournal. LiveJournal is sort of an online community where, you know, people go to communicate things about themselves, have fun, hang out. It's a social networking site. So is who you're friends with more predictive of your behavior on LiveJournal or what your interests are? Or neither. Maybe they're the same.
Depends on how long you've been a member. When you first joined, you spent all the groups.
That could be. All right, so say that we didn't pay attention, that we averaged across everybody. Because I don't know. That's a good hypothesis. I don't know the answer to that question.
No, but those who are in the interest rate, the notes rate is specified all the interests you might have appropriately.
So I should make sure to be clear. So the interests here, as we're measuring them, are not the user declared ones, but the set of groups that the user already belongs to. So we're measuring interests by the things that you've already done on the site. So we're trying to predict your propensity to join a group that you're not a member of, either by the groups that you're already in, that is that way of measuring your interests, or by the people that you're already friends with. So what we found on LiveJournal is that the interest similarity, which is the cyan curve here, dominate, and its interest similarity measured by the binary Jaccard, and normalized by community level of interest in something, right? So by that I mean that if there's a community that lots of people are interested in, that lots of people are members of, then we weight that, right? So if there's some community that everybody's in, it gets lower weight. Right, so we normalize by the popularity across all individuals of the groups, because it's less distinctive in terms of your interests. So that normalized one is the cyan curve, and then social ties is the black curve, which is the one we actually saw earlier. And then this is the Jaccard interest similarity, again, without normalizing by which groups are more popular. So if you look at interests in this normalized fashion, that is, where you discount groups that everybody belongs to, you pay attention to the ones that are sort of more descriptive of your interests, then, in fact, that's a much better predictor of your joining behavior than your social ties.
Why is that?
in the LiveJournal data.
And you do a similar thing with the social ties, though, like discount people that have 1,000 friends because you're only one of the 1,000.
So we did do things in the social tie data, although I didn't talk about it, where we did things like left out the high degree individuals, and it doesn't actually change the results. But that's a good point. So how about Wikipedia? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Ties? All right, so here it was interest similarity. I've heard ties. Yeah, it's ties. Quite strongly, actually. So here's the social ties in Wikipedia, which is black. Then we have, so we have two types of ways of measuring interest here. So the cyan and the red curves are, again, they're the normalized versions of these interest measures, binary or counting, right? So we can measure your interest in something by just the fact that you've ever edited an article or by how many times you've edited the article. And what's interesting is that doesn't seem to make much difference in terms of measuring interest by if you ever edited the article or you edited it 5,000 times, doesn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. And then these are the unnormalized vectors, either binary or counting. So normalizing by community preference definitely makes a big difference still, but whether your individual preference is weighted by your level of activity or not seems to make no difference here. And so what I find sort of interesting about this data when we first got this is that it sort of seemed backwards to me, right? I mean, so here's Wikipedia, which is about content, but the social ties seem more predictive of what you're going to edit next than your interests. And then here's LiveJournal, which is about social networking, but your interests are more predictive than the ties. And I think if you stop and think about it for a few minutes, then you realize, well, wait a minute, but you know, creating good content involves a bunch of kind of interaction and activities. And social networking sites are much more about expressing who you are, what your interests are. And so even though they're social networking sites, what you're doing is you're saying, what do I like? And this does turn out to be more predictive of what you're going to do next than your link structure. Whereas here, the link structure that proves to be more important. Now, one thing I do want to make a comment on here is that there's a question about, you know, when we look at the sort of interactions that people are having, that this could just all be sort of short-term coordination behavior. So one of the other things that we look at is basically, how does the interaction that you have now predict your behavior quite a bit ahead in the future? So we'll do things like instead of just t to t plus delta t, we'll exclude your activity in the middle and then see what happens later on. And these social tie kinds of effects in Wikipedia are still having an effect on your behavior quite a bit in the future. So it's not like they're only affecting you right after you have the interaction with somebody. And I think that's important, because if everything that was going on in Wikipedia was just short-term coordination, I think it would be a less interesting set of results.
So these results are really surprising and interesting.
I found them surprising anyway.
Do you have a sense of the data of what people are talking about on these pages?
We do not. And so here's one of the issues that right now, I feel like we've been trying to do, we've backed ourselves into the following box. So the box we're in is that we want to be doing stuff at the scale of sort of all of Wikipedia, which means automated techniques. And at the same time, you know, we're not the greatest natural language processing experts in the world. And so we're sort of limited in terms of what we can do in terms of looking at content on Wikipedia. So that is something that I definitely want to come back and look at. I'm hoping with some people with more NLP strength than we've got, so we can continue to do this at a big scale. But it's an interesting finding, I think, because it's sort of counterintuitive.
Building on that, I think it would be really interesting to see whether these edits that they're making on user talk pages are they really social ties, or are they another form and maybe a better form of gauging your interest? So in other words, if I'm actually editing your user talk page, that may mean I actually care about this article that we're discussing. And this is a real interest of mine, as opposed to if I'm just editing the article and you're looking at that, I might be making, editing, you know, just spell checking or adding a category or something like that.
No, it's true, although remember that that we're only looking at the user talk page edit behavior prior to when the two of you are co-editing an article. So, right, so what has to happen is that the two of you have to have interacted through user talk pages. One of you has to be in the community and the other not. And then the second one has to join.
So presumably people have distributions of pages that they're interested in.
Yep. No, it's true. And so I think what we really need to do is, as you said, is try to get a better sense of what people are actually talking about on these user talk pages. That I agree with completely. But I think regardless, it is even with the Wikipedia data aside, it's just sort of interesting on LiveJournal. I mean, it does, you know, with 2020 hindsight, yeah, I mean, these sites are about more about expressing who you are than who you're friends with in some sense.
Do you have any attributes?
We did not. So on LiveJournal, you can get attribute data. You can question its veracity, but it's there. But we didn't actually look at it. But it is available for that. For Wikipedia, it's not even available because that's just sort of not what Wikipedia is about.
It seems as if the distinction between decisions about how people join groups might be age-related.
I agree. That's definitely true. And one of the things that I'm interested in here, and I said, you know, I said at the beginning that a shortcoming of what we're doing is going to be that we don't have good models that account for individual behavior, but rather for aggregate. And I think that, to me, while I'm excited about these aggregate results, they raise lots of questions about individual behavior that are very interesting that we don't yet have the tools to look at, but I agree with you. To be able to look at some of that variation would be very interesting. So in looking at interests and at ties, the last thing I wanted to do is just sort of bring these back together. So because you know interests and social ties are certainly not separate. So one thing is that when we look at these graphs, one formed of who you're most similar to in terms of interests, and the other formed of who you talk to, these graphs are very disjoint. Only about 15% of the edges overlap. And in fact, if we do a sort of a prediction task where we try to predict your joining behavior either from features that are generated just from similarity or just from social influence, right? So these similarities would be things like number of friends that you have, you know, open and closed triads, things like that. When we look at prediction performance in terms of combining these features, it's statistically significantly a lot better than using either of the two types of features alone. So just sort of looking at a very gross level, looking at interests versus social ties as predictors of behavior, you can do better with both than with either alone. So it's not like the social ties are just measures of your interest similarity. There's something else going on there. Because if it was just a better measure, then one of these two things should work better than the other. And so the other thing we did in tying these together was to look at how interests and ties vary over time. So a natural question that I mentioned at the beginning was, you know, how does your similarity of interest change over time, and as in particular as you start to communicate with people? So here's a specific question. You can look at when two people communicated for the first time and look at the similarity of their interests as a function of that time. So in this plot at zero, and let's just look at this red curve here for a minute. So in this plot at zero is where people first communicated. And then this is their interests measured over time. So their interests are getting more and more and more similar up to the point where they first communicate. And then they're falling again. But they're falling both more slowly than they rose and to a higher baseline than they came from. The way we generated these is to consider each pair of people, whoever communicated, align them by the time that they communicated. That gives you an edit history for that pair of people. And after every edit, you can compare similarity, right? And then just line them up by this time. Now, what this curve here is showing is just a random baseline. If we take pairs of all pairs of people who ever communicated with each other, do exactly the same thing, but instead of lining up by when they first talked, we line up at random. And so you can both see that that these curves are relatively different in shape, but there is some little peak here around zero. You might hope this was just completely flat, right? It's randomly aligned. But what's going on here in part, and we don't completely understand, but there are a lot more people who have short edit histories in Wikipedia than long edit histories. And so there are going to be more people, or there's more people contributing around here than there are out at the edges. And there's something about these people who haven't edited much that they tend to have more similarity. Whether that's because there's a small number of popular articles that the people who don't edit much edit, we don't really know what's going on. But so this baseline is important to just see how real this effect is of aligning things. But it looks pretty substantive. Yeah?
Any intuition about the shape of the curve? Is it exponential drop or exponential explosion?
Well, so I'll tell you, we have a little model of this.
Okay.
So I guess the only other thing to show here is just this was for Jaccard. You can do the same thing for weighted counting and counting versions instead of the binary version of Jaccard. These are now not, like, these two curves were comparable because they were the same measure. The red, green, and blue curves are different measures, so you can only compare the shapes, not the magnitudes of those. But this seems to hold for lots of ways of measuring it. So here's our simple model. We have a sort of random walk model. People choose articles to edit at random. And of course, you choose at random, but according to the distribution of article edits in Wikipedia, right? Not uniformly at random, but some articles get edited a lot, some get edited a little. So you choose articles to edit at random. And then after each edit, for each pair of users, you communicate with a probability that depends on your similarity. So you can just think of people doing random walks through article edit space. Doing random walks through article edit space. And after each edit, they're some distance apart. And with some probability, they communicate. And that probability depends on how close they are. So the closer they are, the higher the probability that they communicate. And once they communicate, then in addition to selecting at random from the set of all articles according to article popularity, you also select from the set of articles that the person you communicated with edited. So you now have a mixture model. You're editing from a mixture of two different distributions. And this is the simulation result compared to that result. So I mean, it shares this fact that it rises faster than it falls. Right, and that it asymptotes to a higher level than it started out with. And so in this model, these are exponential sorts of constants in there.
Yeah, yeah. Log link scale that linear.
So this curve is changing in a linear scale exponentially. Yeah. And these are sort of both exponentials with different constants. But so this is a really simple sort of model. It just says people are random, engaging in random walks. If they get close enough together, they tend to communicate. And then once they've communicated, they influence each other in the future. And that simple model, is not badly matched by the actual data that we saw. So with that, I think I'll sort of wrap up here. So I think large scales, we've been doing a bunch of these large-scale studies of social networks. And at least in our view, they can be used to investigate questions about social ties and interests and the kind of influence that that has on people's behavior. And not just questions necessarily that we made up yesterday, but ones that often have been being considered in the social science literature for a while. And the things I talked about here are the fact that diminishing returns seems to characterize the ways in which your number of friends predicts your future behavior, rather than a critical mass kind of description. And that seems to be true across a fairly wide variety of data sets. In the case of LiveJournal, at least, more connected friends have more influence on you. But how broadly applicable that is across other data sets, I don't really know, because we've only looked at LiveJournal for that. And then looking in Wikipedia, the relative influence of social ties, comparing both Wikipedia and LJ, the relative influence of social ties versus intrinsic interests seems to depend on the setting. In Wikipedia, the ties are more important, and in LJ, it's interests. But in general, I think this area of sort of social scientists and computer scientists working together to look at questions that are interesting on both sides is a very fruitful area. So, and with that, I'll be happy to take other questions. Right. So, I mean, in comparing the two, we never compared any absolute numbers between LiveJournal and Wikipedia. Rather, we compared interests and ties in LiveJournal versus interests and ties in Wikipedia and saw that the curves were in different orders. So I agree, you couldn't directly compare any numerical results between the different data sets. But we didn't. We had sort of we had two curves for LiveJournal that were in one order, and then two curves for Wikipedia that were in the opposite order. Now, you know, there are still big differences between LiveJournal and Wikipedia that we don't control for, like the fact that in LiveJournal there's much more variation in group size than there is in Wikipedia. That could have some kind of effect, but, you know, as with any study, you know, I mean, we're now in the domain of empirical work. You have some models, you have some data. If you think you have a better question to ask, you can go back to the data and ask that question and see if your answer explains our results and your model. But it's hard to make statements about this being more than what it is, which is that there are a set of questions we chose to ask, and you know, the data somewhat surprising, but I definitely believe them, right? I mean, they're very statistically significant results.
So I just want to follow up the question that Nikki Nomura asked earlier, because it has to do with your definition of what is a group, which is jointly editing a particular page. But if people are already in the group and you don't have good measures of that, because, for example, they're jointly talking about the article on the article talk page, which then spills over into their personal talk pages, and then they get around to acting on those decisions that they've made through the coordination, you're really getting alternate. So one possible explanation is you've got alternate measures of people being in the same group rather than kind of something that can be interpreted causally as being connected with people gets you to end up in the groups that they are already in.
Sure. Yep, absolutely. I mean, if it turned out that people were already in these groups by some other measure, then...
So given the data that you have without even doing the language stuff, since you could easily get their...
Yep, that's true.
...comments in the article talk pages, you should be able to control that.
Sure. Yep, absolutely. So you could just look at the article talk pages and make sure that... Well, so I guess that's the real question is what... You'd have to think about your model for a minute. I mean, what's your model of being in the group? Is it that editing the article or the article talk page is being in the group? Then we would just expand our definition of being in the group. If it's that any activity communicating is, right, I mean, you could argue the whole studies doesn't make sense because all people are doing is indicating group activity or not, and there is no social tie in Wikipedia, although I would push back pretty hard on that because I think there are pretty strong social ties on Wikipedia. I think it's what keeps people going there. So assuming that's not the argument, then I think there's a question about what kinds of activities indicate social ties and what kinds of activities indicate work or belonging. So I guess the choice we made is to say that we wanted to study social interactions, their effect on the work product of Wikipedia, which is why we chose the article edits as the group sort of group joining behavior as the outcome. So my inclination would be then to back up and look and say, okay, well, let's also look at communication on the article talk page and use that as another form of social tie and compare that to the form of social tie that you get on the user talk pages and see if those are different predictors. But yeah, no, it's those are all, I mean, Wikipedia is an interesting and fairly complicated community, but those are all good points.
So I thought your model, the fact that the simple model seemed to look so good. And it's
yeah, it really surprised us. Like my student said, well, let's just try this. And we were like, yeah, right, sure.
So I'm wondering, are there non-intuitive predictions that the model would infer? And also, have you thought of models that are not based on individuals? So for example, I don't know if this would work because I thought of it about 10 seconds ago, but if as a person evolved on Wikipedia, they focused more on a specific set of content, you might see a similar model where the peak is simply an artifact of the alignment process.
Right, well, that's what we tried to do with the random baseline, was to show that there is a peak that's an artifact of the alignment process, but it's much smaller than the peak we get out of the data that we were looking at. Right, so there was a peak with the random, that's why we did a random baseline. And there was a small peak in the random baseline, but it's much smaller than, so that is sort of.
But the finding of people, but the selection of people based on their article, on their user talk, could be sort of reflecting that they're starting to edit more specific types of pages. I don't know if that's true, but it might be interesting to think about.
Yep.
Content-based versus user-based.
Yep, that's true. That's true. Oh, that's a good point.
Okay, let's thank our speaker once more.
Great, thanks.